Order, please. This is the Senate Education Committee with us, Senate President Huggins, Senator Gardner, and myself, Stevens. Two bills we're going to be hearing today and holding for future hearings. We have Senator Stebbins with us. The first is Senate Bill 84, Military Youth Academy, and the second is Senate Bill 6, Funding for School Meals. Senator Giesel.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Giesel. I'm the senator for District N. That's Turnagain Arm and the northern half of the Kenai Peninsula. Senate Bill 84 does three things. It amends the state statute to change the funding mechanism for the Alaska Military Youth Academy. Secondly, it establishes the program in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And third, it updates the program name from Alaska Challenge Youth Academy to the Alaska Military Youth Academy. Now, I could yammer on and on, but I'm mainly going to tell you the person, the people reason that I'm carrying this bill. I became aware of the Youth Academy about 15 years ago when I was in graduate school. I went out there to visit because they had a program that was encouraging kids to get into the medical field, and I was so impressed with the program. These are kids who otherwise are falling through the cracks. So I was aware of the program, and then about 3 years ago, I was knocking on doors, and I knocked on the door of Barbara and John Lopatrone. John Lopatrone was the carpentry teacher at the Military Academy, and it's hard for me to talk about this because it's very, if you could read his letter, if you take time to read his letter, it's in the back in your supporting documents. This is about kids that are falling through the cracks. And this academy makes a tremendous difference in their lives. You know, we worry about kids' esteem and, you know, we can't have too rigorous standards. This program has rigorous standards, and that's exactly what these kids need. And these kids come out successful. So, it targets young people, 16 to 18, who have dropped out of high school. It is a 22-week residential school program. It's graduated over 4,000 cadets. If you've ever met any of these cadets, they are impressive. There's about 27 different states that have 33 of these programs, and ours is ranked among the top five. So, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing this bill. This is a bill that makes a difference for kids who are dropping out of high school, and we can turn their lives around with a program like this. Thank you for hearing the bill. I'll let my staff person, Lindsay Williams, continue with a breakdown of the bill.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Lindsay Williams, staff to Senator Giesel. So currently under AS 1430-740, about a third of the program funding comes from a base student calculation. The formula is equal to the BSA multiplied by 7 for each residential student, added to the BSA multiplied by 6/10 for each non-residential student, and then we subtract any amount received by the program in federal matching grants. This formula was created in 2002 to protect a young and fledgling program. Over the past decade, the Academy has grown and proven to be very successful and viable, and so it's time to move this program funding to a direct appropriation so that the Academy can budget and focus on being results-driven and their graduation rates. While the Alaska Youth Academy has been operating since 1993, it was never formally established in statute under the direction of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. This bill helps to correct this oversight. And as far as the name change goes, in 1999, Senator Stevens, along with the legislature, encouraged changing the name of the program to the Alaska Military Youth Academy. This is the name we all know and recognize today. And if it pleases the committee, although it's a short bill, I do have a sectional if you'd like me to go through that. We also have Commissioner General Katkus and Deputy Commissioner McHugh Pierre, as well as Director Burton, to answer any questions for the committee.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy is with us. Let's look at the fiscal note, just so we understand that. So I understand the funding stream is changing. You're not going to be using foundation formula. Is that correct anymore? That there will not be used? So maybe help us understand that and the impact on the budget in the future.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. They're changing the funding stream. So this bill is repealing the current BSA calculation and changing it to a direct appropriation. So instead of a department transfer, it'll be a direct appropriation to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And McHugh might be able to answer that question in a little more detail if you'd like.
Okay, let's do that in a few minutes. Just ask you to explain to us the reduced costs, increased costs, just so we know what's going on there. But we wait till McHugh here comes up. Just another question. How about the talking about the graduates, the high school diploma versus the GED? What is the ratio? How does that work out? And is there a difference there when you when these? And it's a great program, from what I understand. But as these kids leave the program, are they able to enter the military with a GED? Does it make any difference?
Mr. Chairman, the people that can best answer that question are the program director, who's here, as well as General Katkis and Deputy Commissioner Pierre.
Good. Okay, we'll do that. Before you leave, any questions? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I'm not sure I understand what the impact is of the Section 2, which makes the Alaska Military Youth Academy part of the National Guard Youth Challenge Program. Does it change the functioning in any way, or is it simply a formality?
It's simply, through the chair, Senator Gardner, it's simply a formality. By repealing the base student calculation, it removes the reference to the Alaska Military Youth Academy, and so it needs to be formally established under the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Thank you.
And just as one more comment, Senator Giesel, you referenced a letter that I don't believe is in my file. Does anybody else have that?
No.
And I'm sorry, would you tell me again his name?
His name is John Lopetrone, L-O-P-E-T-R-O-N-E. He's the one that brought this to my attention and has been keeping after me for the last 3 years.
Great. Well, thank you. We'll share that with Tim. We'll put it in our files here.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Pierre.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Deputy Commissioner McHugh Pierre, DMBA. Just to address the fiscal note question, if I may, before General Katkis and Director Burton come up. So you have two fiscal notes, one from Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and one from Department of Education. And essentially, this is a zero change. It's just for formality. It's for reference, the fiscal note. So this budget year, the current operating budget bill is the vehicle that will fund the program. The effective date of this bill is for next fiscal year, which means we'll have a direct appropriation. We'll go through the budgeting process for this division, and the budget vehicle or the funding vehicle will be the budget bill in fiscal year 15 as well. So what you see is you see the total amount in authority and straight funding for the program in FY14, and we have about 9.5 million in total operating dollars in FY14. So you see that there's about $1.5 million of excess authority there. And so what's changing is the Youth Academy money is not going to be coming from Department of Education. So you see a reflection in the shift from interagency transfers to general fund and general fund match money. Because as Representative Gardner pointed out, this is a National Guard Bureau program. It is a match program through DOD. And so that's reflected by 32 USC 509. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, McHugh. And just, Brother, how does that impact the state of Alaska in cost?
Mr. Chairman, it has no impact at all. It is the same as it was last year. It'll be the same next year. This bill, the nut of this bill is that it allows us to address the results that we're trying to achieve. Right now we receive an amount of money based on a 1 October count, and that does not reflect the amount of graduates we're trying to get. So if we believe Mr. Burton has, you know, the capacity to graduate 350 dropouts, but we only get funded to handle 275, there's no rhyme or reason to the funding formula. And that's what we want to get to, is the focus to set a goal, achieve that goal, and help more kids every year.
Thank you, McHugh. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I have two questions. You talked about matching grant program through DOD. Do you anticipate any changes to that level of funding? That's the first question. And the second one, in terms of using the BSA with an October count not supporting your ultimate goal, do you think or know whether it supports the same goal that every school in the state has?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, for your first question, we have been given commitments from National Guard Bureau that our funding is going to remain the same. Certainly, Mr. Burton and General Kakis have been dealing with Guard Bureau much more frequently than I have since I've been down here, and they have a little more detail for that, but we do believe it will remain the same, even through sequestration. The second part of that question is our funding formula is a multiplier of the BSA that was used to back into a number that was operationally needed in 2002 when the BSA was $3,000 per student. Obviously, things have changed, and the needs of the program have changed, and that funding formula doesn't fit. Does it meet the need for a K-12 school? I don't have the expertise to answer that question, but I can tell you that the BSA and the funding formula and the combination of that for our unique one-off school doesn't quite work.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. McHugh, I was looking at the demographics, and it just reminds me, this is by, I guess, by birth origin. But in any event, I guess I would characterize the program as a school of choice. I mean, a parent has to choose for their child to go there, right? I mean, you don't draft them. You draft them. You send draft letters.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, I'll let Director Burton answer that question, as he's taking a new class that starts on Wednesday, so he can give you the exact detail on how those kids are coming to see him.
Yeah, very good. I look forward to hearing that. And the other one I'll just note was that one of your first lines in the letter under the Youth Academy is nationally the freshmen, 25% of freshmen failed to graduate. In Alaska, it's about 30%, which obviously this program fills a tremendous niche requirement as an understatement. But it doesn't matter where you live in Alaska, you can come to this academy. Is that correct?
That's through the chair. Senator Huggins, that is absolutely correct.
Thank you.
And we actively look for kids all throughout the state.
Right. And you have to apply.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions, Mr. McHugh? Thank you, McHugh. Mr. Burton, General Kakis, please have you with us.
Mr. Chairman, good morning. Tom Kakis, Commissioner for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Good morning. I'm Tom Burton. I'm the Director of the Alaska Military Youth Academy.
Mr. Chairman, if I could start off with an overview of how the military is involved. I'm sitting here in uniform today discussing the Alaska Military Youth Academy. It's a great question on what our future funding will be. First of all, let me go back 20 years when it was first identified and put into the National Guard and DOD threw assets at it. It was because it was identified our dropout rate, our youth at risk in this nation was seen as a national challenge, as a challenge to our national security. DOD felt it very prudent to try to address that problem. So through the National Guard, the opportunity for states to form a structure at at-risk dropout youth and use a military approach on discipline, organization, and instilling values and the culture of the military. Now, this isn't to recruit into the military primarily. This is just to address a niche, just like we identified dropouts. 20 years, we've been very, very successful. Now, in the future, as we look at sequestration, the challenge to our resources, I can't predict exactly how DOD will fund this program in the future. But Alaska has been very, very fortunate in the fact that we have always provided more state resources than we have had military resources. And this is upside down compared to many of the states and many of the programs. But Alaska has stepped forward and provided more funding than the federal government provides for this particular program. And the results speak for themselves. We've had a very, very successful program. This is extremely popular. 20 years of success doesn't mean that the program is perfect, and it's a time to look back. So from a simple name change, which we saw as a problem, to the funding formula. The funding formula presently provides a disincentive to graduate more kids. The incentive right now, get a lot of kids up front. That's where your base funding comes from. and then it has nothing to do with what the results. We're trying to get the results, which is more graduates, not more kids in the program at the beginning. So with a direct appropriation, this provides the commissioner of this department the opportunity to sit before you, identify what our needs are each and every year, and get the participation and make us do our homework so that we do get to that point of a results-based program with a greater graduation rate. What I'd like to do now is turn this over to Director Burden and let him explain a little bit more about the program specifics.
Thank you. Through the chair, if I can just make a couple of opening comments. I couldn't agree more with what the general says. We are a customer service oriented, results based organization now. In the past, we've had occasions when they were trying to get the funding up so they could do more, where they brought up to 330 students. Well, then they had a less than 50% success rate with those students. So we're not really helping the young people of Alaska if we have that sort of an attitude. So we've reoriented, and our most recent class is the highest retention we've ever had. I believe we can do better. The team we're getting in place is getting better and better, stronger and stronger. What we're finding is the current funding formula basically creates a ceiling, and we just can't get above a certain efficiency level with the current funding formula. So I went to my leadership, and I said, I think we need to take a look at this, and I'm very pleased to be here today. And if I can answer any questions, I know there are a couple.
Thank you very much. Maybe we go back to the question about graduates. Of course, the governor has indicated that's one of his two major issues in education. One is graduates. The other was digital learning. But to try to increase the number of graduates in Alaska schools. My question was about the high school diploma versus the GED, and maybe that's more of a military question. What does the military do in accepting members into the military? Does GED make any difference? Are they seen as equal? Is there any difficulty there? And a further question, Mr. Burton, is what is the split between graduates who get their GED and graduates who get a diploma in your program? So, first, General, could you just refer to help us understand what the military's response is when somebody approaches you with either GED or high school diploma?
Well, again, the Alaska Military Youth Academy is not focused just on recruiting and bringing people into the military, but it does provide the dropout students the ability to get the remaining credits necessary if they're that close to getting an actual diploma, which is always a good aspect of it. The GED is a moving target. These folks are allotted into the military at different times, depending on what the standards are required. Now, certainly, we're meeting a opportunity where there's probably more military members present than there are the need. Mm-hmm. So those standards go up to a certain extent. GED, though, is identified as a means of getting into the military. But, again, that is subject to change depending on the military needs.
I understand. Sure. Thank you. Further follow-up on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I think it's also worthy to note, as I recall, that you may get a GED versus a high school graduate certificate, but you can go back to the campus where you originated from to get your high school diploma. And so I would characterize this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would characterize the program as one that allows people that are further enough along they can graduate. But for those that are just regaining their footing academically and in social standing in the school environment, it allows them to take the initiative they learned in the environment that you're providing and go back to the campus because of the number of credits they need, and they can graduate. Is that kind of accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that's accurate. It also provides them the opportunity to experience military culture or work, and some of them are very, very adept in that area. And once they see that, that kind of sets their tone and direction.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins and Senator Stevens, great questions. This is a voluntary program. The individual student actually has to volunteer. We have a great placement director, Deb Morton, and one of the things that we do when we're talking to these students is we make sure they're the volunteer, not the parent. And so we, until they're ready to come, they don't come. That's part of how we're getting to this increased retention, getting to the GED high school diploma. Our demographics skew somewhat younger than most of the programs in the country. About half of our class is 16-year-olds. In my mind, that's a great advantage that Alaska has because we have the ability to get the young people back on track where they can reintegrate with their high schools. Alaska has a great advantage that they can get both a GED and a high school diploma. We do have a number of cases where the parents don't want their son or daughter to get a GED. They'd rather they get a high school diploma. And so the way we evaluate how they're doing on GEDs is if they're eligible for the GED, because some of them are not eligible for a variety of reasons. Some of them choose not to. Our academic instructor and our team down there is top-notch, and of those eligible to take the GED, in the last couple of classes, it's been around 98% have actually been able to get their GEDs. The number of high school diplomas we issue is dependent on, first of all, we have a smaller number of 18-year-olds, and during the program, sometimes they'll turn 19-year-old, a relatively small number. But of those that are within the 7 credits that we can award at the academy, we'll award anywhere from 2 to 10 high school diplomas. So we're doing pretty well in that area.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, through Chair. Thank you for all you're doing for the kids for Alaska here. I have a couple questions. How many staff do you have?
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, we have 75 staff. We have more billets than that. We are unable to fill those at this time.
How many of those are teachers?
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, I believe the number is 8.
Are they certified teachers?
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, they are not.
Okay, and last question: Is there a chaplain associated with the Military Youth Academy?
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, we have voluntary church services every Sunday. We have various volunteer chaplains come in and give services.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Steinman.
Yeah, just on a follow-up, just help me differentiate that as far as certified teachers and non-certified teachers and the advantages and disadvantages of that.
Through the Chair, Senator Steadman, the teachers we have are extremely good. I don't think there's an advantage or a disadvantage to having the certification in our program, because they're nested in an overall program that's directed by the cooperative agreement. Clearly, and we do have one teacher who I believe is certified. She does a great job in our reading and writing. She's got a master's degree, and I'm blanking on what it is. But it's not that we don't have one or two that are certified. It's just that that's not a requirement for the program. We find in our holistic approach that an emphasis on academics at the same time that we have an emphasis on other areas such as life skills, job skills, vocational technical education, physical fitness, we bring them along on many fronts. And so while academics is, I believe, our most important area of interest, it's only one of many. I know I'm not answering the question exactly. I'm trying to give you the best answer I can.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, through the Chair. There's a number of ROTC programs throughout the state. They seem to be growing. There seems to be more and more interest in the military, which, quite honestly, I'm glad to see. Have you ever given thought, or you think there will be some thought down the road, of actually expanding the concept into just a full-fledged academy where students who are not necessarily struggling academically or behaviorally would actually want to apply for it and go through a whole program and come out the other end as part of the military?
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, I personally think that's a great idea. We are constrained from doing that by the cooperative agreement that we operate under. We are only allowed to take dropouts. I would also say that I believe we have a great relationship and a great teaming effort with the Department of Education and school districts. Would want to be real careful with that as a concept, because we want to make sure that we're serving the niche market that Senator Huggins talked about, rather than expanding and taking away students that have other options. Great support of the JRTC program. As a private individual, we just awarded some JRTC awards. I think that's a fantastic program, but the populations are different, and at any rate, we would be constrained from doing that under the cooperative agreement. That would take probably setting up a different program, similar to our program, but funded only by the state of Alaska.
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, the cooperative agreement, which Director Burton's related to, are the rules and regulations that National Guard Bureau sets out, National Guard Bureau being the program over the entire U.S. So it affects much greater than just our state. So we're constrained by those rules and regulations.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, as I recall here a few years back, one of the graduates from the academy went on to the Naval Academy, I believe. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that is accurate.
Yeah, which is one of the more difficult schools to get into, as I recall. But what I would ask you to do, and I've been to more than one, and I've been to lots of graduations, would you just kind of describe what a graduation is like, and particularly for the parents at one of the Youth Academy graduations?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I hate answering questions like this because I tend to start weeping in public. I'm starting to think that these are planted questions. The most recent graduation, I think, is a great example. We had it at the Denina Center. We're gratified to have Governor Parnell come and speak. We had a lot of parents. We had about, 1,800 or 1,900 people come to the graduation. We had 144 graduates. It was packed, to say the least. I wouldn't say flags flying because there's no wind, but we had flags on the stadium. We had the Alaska flag, the United States flag, a very patriotic theme. Providing diplomas and awards to these kids is profoundly gratifying. In many respects, it's one of the highlights of their lives. At the end of that, they do the traditional hat toss, and I think it's safe to say that the emotion is almost overwhelming as the parents see their children being so successful.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, if I could, there's one point, and I've noticed it also on returning soldiers from theater. The shaking of their hands as they get on the plane to go is usually kind of limp and kind of unsure. Yet their return when they step off in the plane, it's a solid grip, and greeting 300 to 500 soldiers returning your hand hurts. As you look at the Youth Academy graduates, it's the same thing as they're stepping up there to get their diploma. I don't know if Director Burton sets them up and says, make sure you give a firm handshake, but those kids coming across the stage, you almost wince at how aggressively they sincerely appreciate having succeeded at something, and they demonstrate that through a simple handshake as they come across the stage, and it's quite an impact.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that is not a setup. They are sincerely as excited as they've probably ever been in their lives. They know they've accomplished something. We do have standards. I heard that mentioned earlier. Our standards are high, and we keep those up through the very last day of the program. We have had occasions in the past where a particular student was recalcitrant, didn't believe we'd do it, and we've released them up to one day before the end of the program. So they understand that our standards are high, and we keep them high, and they're very appreciative of what they've done as a significant emotional event in their lives.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I might. The other one, and this is just my personal professional opinion, that sometimes the measurement of whether it's a GED or high school graduation certificate probably is a misplaced standard in a number of cases, because these young people have hit the bottom of the life of upward mobility. And this is, to coin a phrase that's been used nationally, it is a great hope to be able to move forward. And so I think we all have to think about that a little bit, and it's shown the best in the faces of the parents at graduation, because they had given up hope, and the academy provided some hope and a structure. And if I might, I would ask you to describe it, but I'll describe a little bit of it that I've noticed in the past. Is you can have a formation of young men and young women. Some will have a baseball cap on and be nice slip down, and others will have a steel pot on and a pack on their back, because the ones with the steel pot and the pack on their back have demonstrated they have some challenges. So you just stack some stuff on top of them so they know that, yes, everybody's recognizing their missteps in life. But could you take that a little further and how you demonstrate those kinds of things to students who are having challenges?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, what he's describing is our hardcore program. We have many standards. We try and start with instilling the kind of values that we believe young people should have: honor, courage, commitment, integrity, et cetera, so on. So we give them the big picture. We're trying to establish a culture where we tell them what to do, not necessarily what not to do. But at the same time, they are still young people, and they still run afoul of the rules that we do have. And we start with the normal disciplinary process, verbal, but sometimes we go to push-ups. Things like that, running them to a point and back. We try and keep it positive, kind of motivational. But as the transgressions perhaps are a bit higher, more severe, we give them a steel pot, put a put a pack on their back. They have extra special duties to do involving sometimes a toothbrush in the latrine, you know, some of those old-time things. It's a quasi-military environment. It's we try and keep it positive, but it's also a quasi-military environment where there are certain expectations of how they act and what their performance requirements are. We adhere to those, and we make sure that they all have a chance, one, to understand that they have transgressed, but two, to understand that, hey, now the transgression has been rectified, they get back in platoon, and there's no lingering lingering negative effects from that.
Thank you for the questions. Well, thank you. It's very interesting to hear this. I wouldn't object to every American person going through a military training. I went through basic combat and advanced infantry before I went to Officers Candidate School. It builds character. It certainly gives you some discipline, and I appreciate what you're doing. If there are no further questions, thank you very much, gentlemen, and we will hold this, put it on a meeting as soon as we can and try to move it out quickly. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity this morning.
Thank you. Take a brief ID so we get ready here. Come back to order, please. We are dealing now with Senate Bill 6, funding for school meals. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm state senator representing East Anchorage and Elmendorf, and appreciate the committee's time this morning. This bill would provide a state match for schools participating in the federal free and reduced price school breakfast and lunch program. The state match would be 35 cents for each breakfast served, 15 cents for each lunch served. And Alaska is one of the few states in the country that does not have a state contribution. And this causes a gap of about $2.1 million for our schools, which they fund out of their BSA or general funds. The studies are very strong in this area, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Kids that get school meals or kids that get breakfast or meals at school are the studies show tend to be less obese, have better attendance rates, better behavior, better test scores. Mr. Chairman, we spend over $1 billion in education every year, and if we're sending our kids to school hungry and they're not able to pay attention, then that money is not being as used as good as it could be. This bill has actually passed the Senate twice before, and I appreciate the opportunity to come. It's something that has widespread support, and I have my staffer, Kendra Kloster, here to give a very quick presentation on some of the impacts of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, Kendra Kloster, staff to Senator Wilkowski. I think you should all have a presentation in front of you. I'll try to go through this fairly quickly. So the three goals for the school meals bill is increasing the number of meals that we serve, more kids fed in the school, and more nutritious meals served. Problem number one, kids in need. One out of every eight Alaska families struggles to put enough food on the table each year. And some other statistics, 74,000 Alaskans seek food assistance, and 43% of the households are visiting food pantries have children under the age of 18. 51,000 Alaskan children are eligible for free or reduced lunch. However, six school districts are not offering either breakfast or lunch, and 20% of these schools are not offering breakfast. Alaska is in the bottom 10 of the states for participation, so we would like to see what we can do about increasing that. Problem number two, schools in need. As you can see, the differences here on the road system versus rural schools on how we prepare our breakfast costs a lot more than the reimbursement that we are getting from the federal government. That is for breakfast, the first one. The second one is for lunch. So what we're seeing here is a gap. We get our student payments about $16.5 million, and this is from 2009 to 2010. And then federal subsidies were $32.5. Between this time frame, we were taking money out of our school operating budget at about $9 million. And we're working on updating some of this information, but we have seen in other years about $7.8 million that we're still taking out of operating budget funds. So it's still a big gap that we're looking to fill here. Smart investment. We definitely having a solid investment in our kids' future. So we have many studies here, as the senator had mentioned, short-term and long-term effects. Short-term, better performance, better behavior, better attendance, better health. And long-term effects, we have from having better attendance, we have lower dropout rates, lower prison populations, higher incomes, and addressing the obesity rates here in Alaska. Better academic performance. You can kind of read through some of these studies. I know in your packet there's a long list of them. I didn't give you the multiple pages of each study, but it's a background. So we're looking at just really improving the test scores by having meals each morning and the afternoon. Kids are paying attention. They're able to soak in the information. I know when I'm not fully functioning and not having breakfast, I have a difficult time paying attention, so I can't imagine kids on what they're going through as well. Some other studies here, improve scores in language, reading, and math, and improve listening skills, and if you're skipping breakfast, you're going to have the slower brain function. So better behavior, calmer, more obedient, better behaved, and as you can see, I've cited the number of studies here. I'll go through these a little quicker. So fewer emotional problems when we're looking at behavior and better attendance. We've heard from a number of people. I've talked with Dean Hamburg, and I know Adrian is here from the Juneau School District. You know, a lot of kids look forward to coming to school to have these breakfasts and their lunch as well. They've heard from kids, you know, that are not eating during the weekend, so they save up their lunches, and they look forward to coming. So they've heard this on numerous occasions that they have actually passed on to me. So we're seeing higher rates of attendance, lower rates of tardiness, and better health. This really teaches kids they have standards in place to make sure that they're not kind of feeding them junk food. They're trying to increase their standards. They're having better health. This teaches the kids at a long term on how to eat healthy. And the proposal here, we are looking at putting in some state funding, 35 cents for each breakfast, 15 cents for lunch. And we'll say as our rates increase, as we have more kids participating in the program, you can get more federal dollars that way coming to the state. You've seen there's probably a number of examples or a number of letters. We've collected many. This is just some example from different school boards, schools, and assistance groups. I know AFN had passed a resolution in support of this bill last year. Come down to the bottom lines. Senate Bill 6 really is a solid investment in our kids' future. It will help them kind of get to the finish line, pay attention to the school. As Senator mentioned, we're spending $1 billion in education. Let's make sure that they are paying attention and soaking in this information and not focusing on when their next meal is or if they're hungry and not paying attention. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions, I know Marcy from Department of Education is here, and Adrian's in the audience, who is with Juneau School District.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, just to help me understand, does this actually extend, add additional children into breakfast and lunch program, or are we really just talking about replacing funding from one source, foundation forming, with funding from another source, a direct appropriation? Just help me understand that.
Senator Stevens, what this will do is, right now, as I had mentioned, we're taking funding really out of the operating budget, and which could be money from classrooms. So this is kind of helping, taking it from another funding source and putting it towards that. It's not going to cover the entire shortfall that we've been having, but it will help increase that. And some of the schools I've talked to, they're going to be using some of the funding to increase the nutrition of the meals. And so it's not necessarily saying that we're going to add more students, but that's one of their goals is trying to do as well, is to be adding more students. And like I said, the more that we add, the more funding that we will get from the federal government as we increase those numbers.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. On page 27, it talks about the state supplement to federal funding would be 35 cents for breakfast and 15 cents for lunch. And I have a couple of questions. I'm surprised that the breakfast is much more than the lunch. Is that because of the level of existing funding, or is it because the breakfast actually would cost more than the lunch? That's the first question. Yes.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, I would actually defer that over to Adrian, who might be able to answer that a little bit better.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe we get Adrian up here. Yeah, we'll just have her join you if you don't mind.
To chair.
And for the record, please, your name.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Senator Stevens. My name is Adrienne Schwartz. I'm the food service supervisor for the Juneau School District. Thank you for having me here this morning. To Chair Gardner, to answer your question, it would be, from my perspective, the 35 cents per breakfast. Having more funding for breakfast rather than lunch would be helpful because we have a very low number of students participating in the breakfast program. The reimbursement rate is quite a lot lower than the lunch program is, and with the supplemental funding, we could provide a higher quality breakfast that students may be more interested in coming to participate in than they currently are.
Thank you for the question, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. The illustration shows bacon and eggs and toast and orange juice, but when I've talked with schools about the breakfast that they offer or would want to offer, one of their big concerns is time and making sure that kids still get to class, particularly kids come in on the bus. There isn't really like a lunch hour there. And what they talk about is having something like milk, banana, and a granola bar that kids could eat actually in their first hour of class. Is that more what your experience is?
Yes. Typically, our breakfasts consist of something fast. We have some cold breakfasts and some hot breakfasts currently. Here in our district, we have half of our schools that are participating in the National School Breakfast Program. The other half are doing a donation volunteer-type program so that all of their students can eat for free. I bring that up because those schools are having a lot higher success of children's participating, of course, because it's offered for free for everybody. But from my perspective, I see this funding as vital so that we can make sure we're offering students a full, complete breakfast. Typically now it consists of a cereal bar or cereal or a banana or a fruit, and then they always get a carton of milk. We basically offer at least three components, and they have to take two of those. But we do also offer hot breakfasts, like a breakfast burrito or a breakfast sandwich, sometimes eggs with some, you know, type of hash browns, and then a fruit or a milk along with that as well.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And then lastly, did I understand you to say that in your district it's free participation for students? Are there some districts where students pay a portion?
Yes, let me clarify. or clear that up. Currently in our district, half of our schools participate in the National School Breakfast Program. So for that, we have students that are paying full price for a breakfast, which is $1.75. We have students that are eligible for reduced price breakfast, which is 30 cents. And then we have students who are eligible to receive a free breakfast. The other half of our schools currently offer free breakfast for all students, but we don't receive a federal or state reimbursement for those breakfasts.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Could you give us a rough idea of free, reduced, and paying the full fare, how that works out in your district, just roughly, if you can tell us numbers?
Okay. Senator Stevens, currently we are serving approximately 1,300 meals per day, and that's a combination of students that are eligible for free, reduced, and paid meals. A little more than half of those students being served are eligible for free and reduced price meals. The remaining portion of the students served are paying for meals, and that's the same as, well, actually a little higher percentage students that are eligible for free and reduced price meals are participating in the breakfast program than those who are paying for breakfast.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
You're welcome.
Any questions, Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you, and thank you, Adrian, for being here today. How many Title I schools do you have in the Juneau School District?
I should be able to answer that question, and I do not know. I would have to get back to you with
that. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Which has a significant impact on the number of, and but can you tell me the plateau? Used to be like 70% to be able to qualify for Title I. What's the percentage now?
I believe that, and I think that we have Marcy from the Department of Education here, and she would know that answer. I know it's somewhere in the 40 to 50% range, and we do have two elementary schools that are currently have higher than 40% students eligible for free and reduced price meals, and we have one of our high schools that has 60% of the students that are eligible, and then district-wide there are 30% of our students who are eligible for free and reduced price meals.
Thank you, and Mr. Chairman, thank you. Here in the past, we had some meetings, I think it was actually last year, and it was about food quality, which you've alluded to, and one of the Anchorage, your counterpart, as I recall, was talking about food quality and obesity. I assume Juneau has a challenge with obesity of younger students, like most school districts. And when asked about what was on the menu that day in Anchorage, I think the response was, I'm not sure, but we'll check, and they came back and said it was French toast sticks. Now, I'm not so sure that is the most healthy thing, but is that still a menu item that shows up in the morning?
To Chair Huggins, yes, that is, but with the changing requirements that we have had over the last year, even when we serve an item like French toast, it has to be at least 50% whole grain, which that will be, that requirement will be increasing over the next few years. And we have other requirements in terms of sodium and sugar and the amount of protein and carbohydrates. So all of that is being looked at really closely right now so that schools are making sure that they're providing the healthiest meals possible to address the obesity issues.
Yeah, thank you. And one more question, if I might. And thanks, Adrian, for Senator Wilkowski. Obviously, we have a huge national debt, and that was alluded to here in the recently by one of the members of the Senate talking about the federal government was not a reliable partner. So my question in your research on this program, whether or not the federal government is, in your opinion, a reliable partner.
Senator Huggins, through the chair. There's sequestration. I don't know that the sequestration is going to impact school meals. I know that when this bill was passed originally, I believe in the 1940s by Congress, the stated reason was because, in fact, it was passed. Congress created the school lunch program in 1946, quote, as a measure of national security, because too many young men were unfit for military service due to malnutrition. So I would be very surprised if there were cutbacks in this area, Mr. Senator Huggins. And I know this has been a priority of the federal Obama administration and Congress. And it was bipartisan. It's always been bipartisan, both sides supporting this.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Would you tell me the year again when you said the American Youth for Fountain? It was World War II, is that
1946
right?
1946 was when it was passed.
Interesting. Okay, thank you. Yes, Senator.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, would this be 45 cents? It's 45 cents per day per student, and that would be all of Alaskan students.
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, it's 35 cents for breakfast, 15 cents for per lunch, and that's the base amount. And so, if you're a school that is participating in that program, for every free or reduced price meal, that's what you get. It's tied to the funding formula, so that if you're in a rural school district, basically if you're outside of Anchorage, you're probably going to get more. In rural Alaska, it's much more, and that's to compensate for the much higher cost of the meals. And I would add, just to go back to a question I think Senator Huggins had, in Anchorage, we've heard testimony last year from Assistant Superintendent Mike Abbott that they would use this to expand their program and also to increase the quality of the food there because of the obesity problem. And I think so schools would have that option how to use it. They have a shortfall in many of the schools, and so increasing the quality of the food to help with the obesity problem in schools that don't offer it, they would use it to help offset the funding costs.
Just a follow-up, and I may have missed it through the chair. Is there an estimated fiscal note?
There is. It's $2.3 million per year.
I'm just wondering if it's in our packet.
Okay. It should be, yeah.
Right.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Gardner.
So do I understand correctly that in some schools they're using other funding sources for this, so if this bill should pass, it would free up funds for schools to use in other ways?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, that's absolutely correct. Right now there's a gap, and we've heard $7.8 to $9 million. It's millions of dollars, and yeah, so the schools take that from their BSA money that we give them or whatever source, and they use it to cover
Thank
the gap.
You.
Thank you. We have some testimony from David Neese online. Mr. Neese, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please identify yourself for the record, Mr. Neese.
My name is David Neese, resident of Anchorage, speaking for myself, former teacher for nearly 30 years in the Anchorage School District. Just came in to testify on Senate Bill number 6. I have a couple of things that worry me about this. The number one thing is that the way it's written, it looks like it's provided to each student who is eligible. So I just understand on the funding whether or not they would get reimbursement for each meal that was served or just the number of children that are eligible. Because in the Anchorage School District, you have 22,000 of the 50,000 children that are eligible. That's because they use the USDA standard for the poverty level for the free and reduced lunch. So a family of four that makes $54,000 a year is eligible for reduced lunch. And if they make $38,000, they are eligible for free lunch. Now, the fiscal note on this says it'll cost approximately $2 million a year. But in Anchorage, using those numbers, it's going to cost you $1.9 million just for the Anchorage School District. At a school on East Side like Ptarmigan, which is 75% it's a Title I school, 75% of the children are on it. So the breakfast program there will cost $21,000 a year for 337 students. So the problem I have with this is because when I retired, I moved into East Anchorage, and what I would see every day that they are on the 1st and the 15th when the assistant staff could come out and they could go to the store and purchase food. I saw families in there at midnight 10, purchasing their entire 2 weeks' worth of food. But at the same time, I know that a lot of those children are going to school and getting their breakfast and their lunch, and there's a disconnect between those two things. If you are going to fund this bill, and I think it's a good thing to feed children, then I think the allocation for this money needs to come out of the money the families are getting to feed their children. In other words, that 15 cents for lunch and 35 cents for breakfast ought to be coming out of the state credit cards they're getting to purchase the food for the children. Does that make sense?
Well, I appreciate your comments, Mr. Nies. Now, but maybe you could clarify what your question is so I can ask Senator
Willis. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, my question is the people that are getting this benefit, is the school district, like Anchorage is going to get nearly $2 million, do they get reimbursed for the ones served or the ones eligible? And how much waste is there? I know when I was at Hanshoe, they had to guess how many children would eat breakfast every day, so there was food thrown out every single day for breakfast and lunch. And I have a problem with that because it's being paid for, it wasn't being served. I just assume that leftover food be given away for free to children that are hungry.
Thank you, Mr. Nies. All right, so I have that down. The question is about served versus eligible and also on the waste. Thank you. Any further questions you have?
Why are we using the USDA level 2 for free and reduced lunch? It seems to be extraordinarily high, $50,000.
And why are we using USDA? Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Nies.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Senator Willikowski, any response to the questions you received on CERD versus I read my writing now.
Thank you, Mr.
Did you write it down, I hope?
Well, the way the legislation is written is it's to supplement the cost of lunch and breakfast provided to each student who is eligible for a free or reduced price lunch. And the fiscal note is produced by the state, so if that number is incorrect, I would call the state up and ask them to where they came up with their $2.3 million. But the way the statute, the way this bill is written is to supplement the cost of lunch and breakfast provided to each student who is eligible for free and reduced price lunch. Did you get clarification?
Yes, please.
Kendra Kloster, staff to Senator Willikowski. So the way that this is working, so for every meal that is served, you're getting the 35 cents and the 15 cents. So right now, it's for every person that's served, we're getting that funding. That will be the funding that the state would provide.
So it's based on, answer to the question, it's based on on meals served,
yes.
Not on those eligible.
Right. So it's based on the meals that are served and how we're giving that funding. Right. So as I mentioned, as more people are entering the program, that funding will be available for them.
Thank you. And the issue of waste, any comments on that?
I would have to probably defer that question to Adrian to figure out what kind of waste that we might be seeing in the schools and what they're doing with that.
Thank you. And another question was asked is about USDA funding. A response to that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question
on
that one.
I'm not sure I understood it either. Anybody? Yes, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. As I understand, the question is why are we using USDA levels for eligibility when their cutoff is $50,000, and I think he thought that was too generous.
Have to get back to you.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what really the question is, but yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll try to figure this out. Let's go to Mr. Johnson here in the room. Bruce Johnson, glad to have you with us. He was here. Is he here? No longer. Okay. Any further comments to come before us at this time? We will hold this over and have it on agenda of a near future here. We're adjourned.